Hello, friends. We are beginning with video commentary number 24 in this series where we're working on the rules of magic for the astral plane, and these are being posted on YouTube and probably will be on Makara as well. We're beginning, we're on page 293, and we're beginning a very important section. Very practical section called Astral Energy and Fear. Remember that this particular book, excuse me, is useful in mastering the astral body, and so I suppose it's useful in preparing for the second initiation, though its subject matter does actually go far beyond that. As we have noticed, the Tibetan writings some very abstruse things about the eight points, for instance, that we've been reviewing, the eight aspects of man and their correspondences within the physical body. Okay, let's go ahead with it. The subject now to be considered is of most practical application, for it concerns the astral body, the body in which a man is preeminently polarized and of which he is more potently conscious than of any other body. Does this mean what, all men? Or does this mean those who are not yet, let's say, disciples? Perhaps. But maybe more than we realize, we are attentive to our feeling and desire states and to the reactions of this sentient vehicle. The etheric body is really below the threshold of consciousness. We might say, so many automaticisms operate through the etheric body. You know, we have the sympathetic nervous system, well, the autonomic nervous system and the sympathetic part and the parasympathetic part. We have all those things, and we're no longer aware of them functioning. They take care of things on their own, and we do not have to give conscious attention to them as perhaps we had to do in some earlier initiations in Lemurian times. Human beings remain unaware of the passage of forces through this vehicle, and the nearest they get to recognition of it is when they speak in terms of vitality or lack of vitality. Well, that is going on quite frequently, right? The sense of being filled with vitality or being tired. At least that is a common experience for all. The physical body makes its presence felt when something goes wrong or through the gratification of one or other of the appetites. Let's just say, but otherwise, about this. But otherwise, again, below the threshold of consciousness. And maybe, you know, if a person is very athletic, this is always my problem. Things disappear here. If a person is very athletic and the body is well trained, well, you know, they probably, it probably supports itself without calling much attention to itself in the consciousness. If one is sick or debilitated or disabled, then again, we have the physical consciousness. I remember, it was back, you know, before Mary Bailey retired, somewhere in 83 or 82, and she had to go into the hospital for some kind of a heart issue. And she said her consciousness was drawn right down into the physical body. And the way she talked about it, it sounded to be a very unusual thing. Actually, what we hope is that all the aspects of the personality will operate in an automatic way, and that we will be somehow focused in the higher consciousness, maybe on the higher mental plane, or eventually, as the masters are, even higher than that. The situation is, however, different in connection with the astral body, for there is the vehicle of experience for the majority, and few there are, who do not pass the greater part of their conscious life, recording the reactions of that body and vibrating between the two poles, oh goodness, of happiness and misery, of satisfaction or non-satisfaction, of assurance or doubt, of courage or fear. Well, let's just say this, for some reason it just wants to, So this type of astral awareness is very common, and eventually when we achieve true mental plane. No, I'm going to do something different here. Just excuse me, you know why I do it by now, right? Just to work along. So this is mental polarization, MPOL, helps me out. When we achieve true mental polarization, perhaps the awareness of the astral body slips below the threshold of consciousness. So this really means that the inherent force and life of the emotional sentient vehicle govern the life expression and mold the experience of the incarnated soul in the majority of cases, and the aspirant cannot assume that this is not the case for him or her. In fact, if we're truthful, well, it depends on our astrology in rays too. Some rays are less inclined towards emotionalism. We're told the second initiation is easier to take for fifth and third ray souls because they tend not to be focused in the astral body or to be focused emotionally or to react emotionally. But still, it looks like a general condition. Therefore, it is of value to us to understand something of what those forces are, where they come from, and how they act and react on man. And we did study some of the forces released upon the astral plane. There were three of them particularly. I'm not going to go hunting for them. I remember that sex emotion was one, and probably a general turbulence caused by the Black Lodge and the reaction to the new incoming forces of a superior kind, which does not mean that reaction will be tranquil. Does not mean a tranquil, easy reaction. There lies his battleground and also his field of victory. And here we are speaking in the Scorpionic language. Okay. Scorpionic. Yeah. So, think of it, the warrior, the one who struggles? Well, the sign most associated with the human monads is Scorpio, and it is conveying the majority of the war-like fourth ray at this time. So all human beings, in one way or another, in order to become true adjudicators between the pairs of opposites, have to go through the great struggle and achieve victory through humility and a willingness to kneel and to accept the impress of the higher energies rather than assert their personality, which is so often the case. Remember, the entire personality is ruled by Mars, if you look at it. Every elemental vehicle, except maybe the etheric vehicle, is ruled by Mars. Okay, so to begin with, it is advisable to bear in mind that all astral energy is part of the astral energy of the solar system. And that, now let's see, Varuna is the ruler. Things are a little slowed down here, I don't know why. Ruler of the astral plane of Earth, and a greater being of the astral plane of the solar system. So all astral energy is part of the astral energy of the solar system. Obviously, we're going to respond much more to the astral energy of the human kingdom and probably the animal kingdom than we are to some other kingdoms on other planets at this time. And many of them have mastered their astral vehicle. Our planetary Logos has not yet mastered his astral vehicle. He's not yet, we're told, a cosmic initiate of the second degree. Not yet. And maybe the judgment day has something to do with that. Anyway, and that's a long way off still. So a part of the astral energy of the solar system, and that therefore, one, the sentient body of a human being is an atom of substance in the sentient body of the planetary Logos. Note. Whoops, sorry. I just don't know why this is. Note that the term atom is used. And maybe, we understand something about scale when we use such a term? That is a question. Okay, we continue to move on. So an atom of substance, the sentient body, a term I much prefer to the term astral, in which I shall continue to use, of the planetary Logos, is an aspect, not an atom, of the sentient body of the solar Logos, larger structure, really. So an aspect is, you know, generally one of seven principles, the seven factors. And let's just say there is an astral body, sentient body of the solar Logos, and, well, maybe there are seven major astral centers there having to do with the esoteric or the higher planets, the synthesizing the sacred planets. But our planet counts and has its place. The numbers are much smaller, as we understand. There's so many human astral bodies, right? But when we consider the planetary Logos' astral body, it's one of what? Maybe, well, you know, one of 10 or one of even 115, but the number is much smaller. So then the term aspect is justified. Okay, so I'm going to underline that term, aspect. And this, in its turn, is influenced by and is channeled for sentient forces emanating from vast centers of energy outside our solar system altogether. So here we have here we have the influences upon the astral body of the solar logos from great sources, you know, and of course Sirius would be one, and other stellar sources, and probably our local cosmic logos, who's the logos of the seven solar systems, of which ours is one, and probably from the one about whom naught may be said, which I often call a super cosmic logos. So we're trying to get a sense of scale, but really all astral bodies are part of one great astral body, ultimately, but we're most concerned with the astral body of humanity, the astral body of our planetary logos in three kinds of divisions, scheme, chain, and here we have the globe, okay, our globe, and eventually maybe the astral body of the solar logos from whence, which we would call, from one perspective, the heart of the sun, and from whence great love tides come forth. And maybe when we are higher initiates, we will be responding more to those. So if this is borne in mind, it becomes apparent that man, being but a tiny fragment of a vaster whole, which in its turn is incorporated into a still vaster vehicle, is the meeting ground for forces greater and more diversified than his brain is capable of recognizing. Well, that's clear. And of course, we may react, but in a way we don't respond. I mean, response is something greater than reaction. It involves perhaps a knowledge of where the energy comes from and what its purpose and nature may be. Hence the complexity of his, that is man's problem, and hence all the possibilities growing out of those expansions of consciousness which we call initiation. Let's just say become aware of energy and force currents and their sources. So we can begin to recognize and utilize every stream of energy pouring through his body of desire and of sentient reaction is but a pathway leading him to wider and ever widening contexts and realizations. So we, it's always that way. Okay, we feel our way towards ever higher sources. Here also lies the safeguard for the majority of human beings in the fact that they possess as yet an apparatus inadequate for the registering and recording of those infinite possibilities. Well, certainly, you know, amazingly multiple. Those infinite possibilities which these avenues of realization offer. Otherwise, I'm having a little trouble with the response of my machine. Otherwise, we would have a situation of overwhelm. Until the mental apparatus is sufficiently awakened and controlled, it would not be possible for man to interpret rightly and utilize correctly the information which his body of sensitive response could, but fortunately does not convey to him. And this is, I think, DK calls this would be the unveiled Neptune. And fortunately, the moon does veil, as does the sun, blocking out fullest sensitivity, which we could not handle. Those veils, you know, they seem to be something we want to overcome. The veils upon the moon are the veils which relate or signifies the veils which relate to the personality vehicles, which certainly do repel or at least remain opaque to the finer energies. And then the sun as a veil is the Ahamkara principle. That principle of I-ness is such a repelling factor that egotism, or that egoism, if it's not egotism, is a repelling factor when it comes to the registration of certain more universal energies. Apart from the constant circulation through his astral body of planetary and solar and cosmic energies, goodness, so this is going on all the time. And, you know, sometimes ignorance is bliss, or ignorance is a protection. I remember DK telling, well, that healthy skepticism, which is part of the modern root race and subrace, is a protection against too much knowledge of an occult or esoteric kind, which humanity, well, really couldn't understand wisely or handle correctly. So just think of it, you know, sometimes ignorance or a certain attitude of mind protects the unready, the unwary. And, you know, when we begin to wake up to occultism, we realize there are many hidden dangers involved in treading this path. So one has to, as Alice Bailey is always saying, and as the Tibetan is always saying, one has to count the cost. So, apart from the constant circulation, so just think what's going on all the time here, through his astral body of planetary and solar and cosmic energies, oftentimes, let's just say, too high for him to register, every human being has appropriated out of the greater whole enough of the astral energy wherewith to construct his own individual and separate astral body. This is done in the stages of appropriation, in which the soul is building the coming personality mechanism. So, every human being has appropriated out of the greater whole enough of the astral energy wherewith to construct his own individual and separate astral body, responsive to his peculiar note, colored by his peculiar quality, and limiting him or not according to his point of on the ladder of evolution. Let's remember that the astral body is attuned to the soul, and even to the monad, if we look at the numerology. So, you know, you know how it goes. The monadic ray has the effect upon the mental ray. The soul ray has the effect upon the astral ray and the astral body. The the personality ray has the effect upon the dense physical body. Can be a ray effect. And in some of the students from Master DK, that ray effect was showing up. This man, LUT, thought he had a ray one physical body. It was really an impress, an overlay from his ray one personality. Well, that's one way of looking at it. And the other way is that the monadic plane is two from the top and the astral plane is two from the bottom. The astral body or plane is six from the top, and the monadic plane is six from the bottom. So there's a, on the monadic plane, there is found heart centers, really. And the monad, in a way, is as much a heart as it is the factor of will. So there is an affiliation there, as we know that heart and astral body are closely connected, just the way the two and the six are closely connected. Okay. This constitutes his astral ring pass knot, you know, that which he has appropriated, and the condition in which astral condition in which he finds himself. Descending condition. This constitutes his astral ring pass knot, defining the limits of his emotional response to life experience, embodying in its quality the range of his desire life, but being at the same time capable of tremendous expansion, development, adjustment, and control under the impulse of the mental body and the soul. Well, I guess what's being said here, there are many sentient potentials for higher contact. Master Mori is always using the word feel, as if it's an important word and not to be discounted because it's associated with the astral body. I mean, it has something to do with the heart, and the heart has something to do with the astral body. So we feel into things that are far beyond us, and this astral vehicle can grow, capable of tremendous expansion, development, adjustment, and control under the impulse of the mental body and the soul. And I think DK is talking about sometimes the astral body or sentient body of the artist and how it has to be enlarged and very rich in order to make the true artist. And of course, the past lives will come into that, and the memories stored in the soul will come into that and add to the richness of the expression of the astral body. It is subject also to vibratory activity. As the result of the interplay between it and the physical plane, life experience, and thus, so let's just say, astral body, also subject to physical currents, and thus the great wheel of experience is set in motion, and will persist until the four noble truths of the Buddha are understood and realized. The assimilation of the four noble truths with the eightfold path gives liberation at last. So, you know, the Buddha prepared the way, and we have to, as we're on the way to initiatory possibilities, use this as a great foundation and realize somehow that the lower 18 subplanes really are the dense physical body of the planetary logos. They are an effect. They are a world of phenomena which is related to the past, and nothing within this world of transiency and phenomena is to be so keenly desired that one becomes attached to it. Now, that detaching process is hard, and there's a lot of understanding that has to go into it, a lot of bitter experience, and the whole idea that what we relinquish, we never really lose, but regain on a higher turn of the spiral. You know, DK talks about the law of sacrifice in his esoteric psychology too there. How when we release something, we regain it in a better form on a higher turn of the spiral. So every one of us has the sort of astral body which we have made and which we somehow we have cultivated over many, many years, no better nor worse than what we have created over many lifetimes. But of course, there are ray and astrological impulsions which may be assigned to us and will condition the way the astral body reacts, whatever its present vibratory condition. I mean, if you're born with a lot of water signs, there's going to be real emphasis on that, on the sensitivity of this sentient body, maybe more so than, you know, and if you're assigned one of the rays that is resonant with the astral body, 2, 4, 6, let us say, then there's going to be a lot of focus there. Whereas if a different ray is your soul ray, then there may be less emphasis, and certain signs perhaps give a greater detachment from the astral body. So everything has to be taken on an individual basis. The astral body has in it the counterparts of the etheric or Laya centers, and through them stream the force and energies earlier dealt with into the etheric body. And this really has to be remembered, and the chart helps us. This is one of Tuya's new charts. And take a look here, you know, if we, what have we got here? Does this allow me to make it bigger? Or am I, yeah, it does allow me to make it bigger. So take a look here. Here are the the astral chakras. And there is a kind of etheric section to the astral plane. Just the way the first four subplanes with the egoic lotus can be considered an etheric or directive portion of the mental plane, and on it goes. You know, we don't really know what's lying on the highest levels of the Buddhic plane, subplane 1 and 2, Atmic plane, subplane 1 and 2, we don't know, but we do know that the etheric factors are involved in the first four subplanes, and I suppose on it goes through the monadic plane and maybe even into the sea of fire, you know. So, interesting, I think. So this astral body has in it the counterparts of the etheric or Laya centers, and through them stream the forces and energies. I think that you know, 35 vortices of force, 35 vortices of force make the master. So that probably takes us to the Atmic plane, with 7 on each one of the 5 planes, and then 42, I would guess, vortices of force make the Chohan of the 6th degree, and 49 vortices of force, I would guess, make the Chohan of the 7th degree. And every one of those higher centers, I think, descends through its correspondence on a lower plane. So you're really getting energies all the way from the Sea of Fire, ultimately, even down onto the etheric level, even though we don't recognize that to be the case. There are 7 centers, 49 vortices of force make the Chohan of the 7th degree, and suppose we're dealing with a head center there, well, then there's going to be head center on the monadic plane, atmic plane, buddhic plane, something on the mental plane eventually, you know, maybe the synthesis petals, or one of the synthesis petals, or the sacrifice petals, or eventually our own vehicle once we get rid of the causal vehicle, and on the astral plane, and finally on the physical etheric plane. So, you know, things just descend from the highest all down through the correspondences on lower planes. That would be my guess, because and what we'd have to know is something about vorticular relationships, and how one vortex may induce another or relate to another. I think the work of Dwayne Carpenter is very good in all of this. I think, you know, he has more understanding of these type of occult motions than anyone I've met. So just kind of go to his website and Lightweaver, something like that, and study what he's put there. And if you have a chance to listen to his webinars or lectures, then do that. So we have the counterparts of the chakras, of the etheric chakras, on the astral plane. These centers carry energies from the seven planets and from the sun to every part of the astral organism, thus putting man on rapport with all parts of the solar system. Now, things are a little different. You know, we know on page 517, 517 of Esoteric Astrology, that he sort of shows us the rays and the planets that are involved with the etheric chakras for the undeveloped man, average man, and the disciple initiate. So the rays and the planets. But when we get to the astral chakras, maybe something different appears. I don't know. First ray head center, and let's see what we got here. We have different rays. You know, we have just different rays than the ones that are assigned etherically, and probably accordingly different planets. The fifth ray is assigned to the throat instead of the third ray. The fourth ray is assigned to the Ajna instead of the fifth ray. The third ray to the sacral center instead of the seventh ray. Solar plexus remains sixth ray. The seventh ray to the base of the spine. Well, there's a number of rays assigned there. So there is a difference. And I wonder if we went to page 151 or so, I may be mistaken there. I think maybe it's just plain old 51 that we're dealing with. Well, anyway, page 51 in Esoteric Healing, that is the important, that's the important chart to show the differences between ray and thus planetary assignments for chakras found on the astral plane compared to chakras found on the etheric plane, but still they carry some of the same, you know, some of the same meaning at least. So these centers carry energies from the seven planets and from the sun. Note that the sun energy, etheric energy, pranic energy, or maybe there are other energies involved, other essences involved, to every part of the astral organism, just the way it would be done etherically, thus putting man en rapport with all parts of the solar system, and we would say through the astral body and its chakras, rapport with the entire solar system via its planets and the sun is established. There are always going to be representations on our planet representations on our planet of the different factors in our solar system. In Shambhala, every planet is represented, every planetary chain is representing one of the greater ray lords we call planetary logoi and so forth. So we have the reflection, at least within our own planetary system, of what's going on in the solar system, and I suppose the reflection as well of the sun. This results in the, these centers carry energy from the seven planets. Okay, this results in the fixation of a man's life destiny. Okay, the design which brings on his fate until he can really control his stars, as it is said. So this results in the fixation of a man's destiny, let's just say in any destiny. Goodness, all these little things are happening. In any one, in, no, in any one incarnation. Until such a time as the man awakens to his immortal heritage and so becomes sensitive to forces that are as yet for the many unrecognized. And then he can begin to direct his destiny. AAB tells us, DK says this, we are no longer, we are no longer a prisoner of the tendencies of our horoscope. But up to that time, you know, as the horoscope is, it may pretty well determine what happens to man, that we can correct that, we can use that, we can use things on higher turns of the spiral than seem to be indicated, if we find the immortality of our soul. Okay, becoming, you know, aware of ourselves as soul and spirit, and then we can begin to guide and utilize our stars according to the purpose which we discover within ourselves. So these emanate from the form, and there is the reason why the horoscope is frequently quite accurate in its delineation of the unevolved and for the unawakened, but is quite in error and at fault in the case of the highly evolved man. Well, you know, I must have remembered that from long ago, because that's basically what I'm saying. We have to be able to control and direct our stars, or at least determine the level of response to these energies. People respond in all different ways, and the orthodox, esoteric, and hierarchical rulers indicate different modes of response to, let's say, certain zodiacal energies. It all depends on the quality of the form. The higher the quality of the form, the higher its frequency, the more it has been transmuted, transformed, and even transfigured, the higher will be the response to the energies which are making their impact. Man is, en masse, what his desire body makes him, and later, as a man thinketh, so is he. Maybe that's more for the disciple, you know. Because right now it's a bit like, as a man desireth, as a man feeleth, so is he. So this comes later. Yeah, later, when there is more mental focus. Now, one day we'll get to review all of our lives. It'll be an astonishing movie, I guess. I'm reminded of that Kirk Douglas movie. What was it called? Illusion or something? Anyway, he's a dying film director, and he dies, basically. He gets to sit in the big movie house as the only attendee and watch the movies of his life. And there's the projection booth and the big film canisters and all that. And the whole film is about wanting to redo certain things, because he has the objectivity to realize where he's made terrible mistakes. And, you know, part of the entertainment of the film is he really gets to redo it, and he really does get to alter his fate, because he kind of comes back to life and he knows what he has to do, and things work out much, much better. The films, I think, the creative arts in film, if we have good ones, that Neptunian kind of conveyance really does open our imagination to possibilities we might not experience in our normal encounters, and therefore can be extremely valuable and help us share the experiences of other human beings, which gives us the sense of commonality and identification and harmony and sameness and unity, you know, all those things, great works of art, sometimes really leave you with that wonderful unitive feeling. I remember going to, when I was in school in the University of Michigan, Stratford, Ontario wasn't too far away. And there they had, you know, wonderful Shakespeare festivals, and something magical was going on. It was Stratford-on-Avon, but the Canadian version of it, not the English version. And when the play was over, even though it might have been one of those blood-curdling Shakespearean tragedies, you'd come out with that sense of timelessness and a great sense of the panorama of the human experience. And you were just, you know, beyond your ordinary personality, you had the appreciation of the pageant of human evolution. The astral body, with its longings, appetites, moods, feelings, and cravings, there's a lot of words, right? Molds the physical body through the attractive forces which flow through it, and so guides the man on unerringly to the fulfillment of his desires. We really have to co-measure our desires. We can't really get rid of them. At least Moria seems to think so. We have to co-measure our desires in line with the divine plan, you know. So those are quite some words, aren't they? Let's just say, we say here, important words in relation to the dynamics of the astral body. Longings, we're not there yet. Appetites, we reaching, seek to fulfill. Moods, harmony, disharmony, feelings, sensitivity, cravings, focused, intense desire. It molds the physical body. I guess if we are a person of low appetite, low desire, our physical body will reflect it, and there will be something more beautiful about the physical body of one who has the higher desire. So always, I would say, when trying to understand where upon the path a person may stand, really do consult regarding their desire nature. What do they really, really, really in their heart of hearts desire? That's going to tell you a lot about the level of emotional focus. And remember, the soul will use, when considering the emotional, mental, emotional, or physical body, the soul will particularly express through the one of those bodies which is vibrating the highest with the greatest frequency, and the personality will express through a body which is vibrating to a lesser frequency. So when you study your discipleship in the New Age book, you will see that happening. And he does take a little paragraph or two and say, well, your soul expresses itself primarily through this vehicle, your personality primarily through this vehicle. And you begin to understand why it is it seems easier to do certain soul-related activities through a particular body than through another. You know, maybe a person has a good mind, but their astral body is kind of a mess. So, you know, in this particular case, the soul is expressing through that higher frequency of the mind, and the astral body will be the recipient of the energies of the personality, leaving always one body unattended. And that has a lot to do with the history of the soul and what can be in any one incarnation left unattended. If the cravings of the sentient nature are dominantly animal in their objective, we shall have the man with strong appetites living a life given over to the effort to satisfy them. And so many people are exactly there, and even people with a good mind, you know, and they use that mind to fulfill the unredeemed appetites which are still running rampant, you know. So they're not really initiates of the first degree. When you're having physical appetites running rampant, you just aren't there yet, right? If the craving is for comfort and for happiness, we shall have the man with a sensuous, beauty-loving, and pleasure-loving disposition governed practically entirely by selfish effort. So this is, you know, low physicality, low astrality. So let's put that in. low physicality. And this is low astrality. It reminds me of lower Taurus, you know. You know, when Venus is not really functioning according to its higher nature, it's looking for all things pleasant. So it is through all the many grades of desire, good, bad, and ordinary, until that reorientation takes place. What do we call it? The reversal of the wheel in the fifth petal. That is a place, I think, where a lot of reversing takes place, which so refocuses the astral energies that they are turned in a different direction. So this is all preparatory to taking the first initiation. And if you look astrologically at what's going on in that fifth petal in the middle of the love tier, the sign Leo and Scorpio are very prominent. So we're you know, going away from egotism, and through struggle, we're trying to birth a new type of Leonian identity, the struggle of Scorpio, obviously. Those two signs don't get along so well, but they are very necessary for each other. Desire becomes aspiration, a scientific method of elevation, he tells us. You know, aspiration isn't just desire, elevated desire. It's a scientific method of transmutation. Let's see. Aspiration is a scientific method of transmutation, and with transmutation, we're always elevating the frequency of a particular matter that constitute a vehicle. Thus, liberation from the wheel of birth is brought about at the fourth degree, pretty much, unless you decide otherwise, and a man is freed from the necessity to reincarnate. Saturn, in one of its aspects, is overcome, and much lower karma is fulfilled. Well, excuse me, we're not there yet, and we would just be pretense if the students, even the advanced students of Master Decay at this point on the outer plane, claim to be there, you know, not there really. If one is honest, maybe occasionally here or there, someone can be found, but that would be the rare, rare exception. Thus, liberation from the wheel of birth, wheel of rebirth, is brought about, and the man is freed from the necessity to reincarnate, though a choice may indicate otherwise. Now, Master Jesus, the one who is now Master Jesus, the Chohan Jesus, he was born as a third degree initiate, but he was born in the ordinary manner. At least DK seems to, you know, cast some kind of doubt on this idea of the Immaculate Conception, which I think was thought up to give the priests more power. And there may be some deep kind of symbolic meaning there, but it's, he says, well, Jesus is pictured as having been born in an unnatural way. I think you see what DK is saying there. Obviously, there was something natural about it. Then the horoscope as now understood, and not forever, as now understood, proves futile, untrue, useless, and the term sometimes used, but wrongly, the horoscope of the ego of the soul means nothing. Well, there are horoscopes which are very useful, and there are inner charts which some of us have been looking at, you know, sort of the ABC chart. Charles Jane was much on that. ABC. Well, a birth chart is the outer chart, the C part is the conception chart, and the A part is the animation chart, when the heart starts beating. And so they are under the three synthesizing planets, and you have for the conception chart, which is very important and discussed a little bit about the reorganized potentials in esoteric astrology. It's my daughter. Well, I can't do that right now, can I? Okay, so there was an example of how a family member can come into your program you're making, but she's a really good astrologer and has helped a lot of people. Anyway, then the horoscope as now understood, we're almost to the end of this program anyway, as now understood, proves futile, untrue, and useless. But there are other ways to look at the horoscope, and sometimes, I don't know, it's a little complex, but there are said to be like 49 inner charts or something like that. It's too complex for me to get into right now. In the old days, one person was lucky if they could do all their 49 charts and just concentrate upon that alone, which I think is excessive. The soul has no individual destiny, but is submerged into the one. Well, that's interesting. Yeah, in other words, let's just say always. Okay, come on. Merged into the one. All. No, it's not going to let me do that. Okay. AL. Always. There will have to be consideration of the divine plan when considering the destiny of the soul, and even more so the monadic destiny. Its destiny is the destiny of the group and of the whole. Its desire is the working out of the great plan, and it will and its will is the glorification of the incarnated logos. And this means even the consciousness of the monad, which is also generically soul. In other words, monad has soul, monad has consciousness, and let's just say in all this, no individualistic no individualistic destiny, but only that which is related to divine plan and divine purpose. So, well, we're getting near the end, really. I would like to suggest to students that they procure, if possible, procure what? Looks like something is missing. So I've got to go here and just check that out that they procure. There's only one, when you use like that. If possible, The Science of the Emotions by Bhagavan Das. If possible, okay, now I'm going to just put that in if I can. Sometimes just the clerical aspects are just problematic. The Science of the Emotions by Bhagavan Das. It is an able treatise. He's got a lot of fifth ray, this Bhagavan Das, as he describes the different types of emotions. It is an able treatise on the astral and sentient body from a very mentally polarized person, I think, and deals with the factors that most nearly concern the aspirant as he faces the problem of understanding and controlling his emotional nature, of mastering the technique of development, and of reorienting it to the wider experience, and of preparing it for the tests and expansions of the second major initiation. By that, he does mean the baptism. The baptism and the final entering of the stream. And note, no. Okay, sorry. Just a note. Note that the second initiation is called major. But then there are some pre-monastic initiations, which are the minor ones, and they bring on some group, increasing group consciousness. Metaphorically speaking, the experience that lies ahead on the path is covered in the following phrases. So here's what I'm going to do, friends. This is it. I'm going to go up here and try to copy this. And yeah, right here. So this is ending number 24. So this is the end of this particular program, but we have to figure out where we are, because when you come back to it, you know, you never know. Okay, so here we are, and this is number 24. And I don't know, we're 293 to what? Give me a page number, please. 296. 293 to 296. And we go on, and it's going to be number 25, program number 25, Rules for Magic on the Astral Plane, 10.9. And it's going to be 296. Well, okay. So we'll get back together on this as soon as we can. And that's a really interesting material, you know. I've been involved in some other books for quite a while, but in the beginning I used to read a lot in this book, as did we all in the Arcane School. Very necessary, that second lesson set for white magic, you know, first light on the path and then the white magical work. But it's all scratching the surface, but still we have to make a beginning. The journey of 10,000 miles begins with but a single step. So we make our beginning, and we forge ahead, assimilating during these next 7 years, especially towards the coming forth of the new dispensation. Let us be ready for it, and let us not only assimilate here, but let us apply. Okay, so this is 296, and off we go. Thank you, friends. Lots of love, many blessings, and we'll see you soon. Okay.